Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Egdon, and with me today is Jack Borman. Jack, how you doing?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Awesome. Good to have you on again. Bit better circumstances, at least for a single game. Wolves were able to win on Christmas. How about that?
It was very Wolvesian. The result you expect the least is what ends up happening. Even with when Luka was playing. A great showing from them, and one that I think certainly has to, at minimum, make you feel a little bit better than what we've seen over the last week or 10 days or so.
Absolutely. Makes you feel better and terribly, terribly worse. It's all happened in one game. I guess we'll just jump right into it. The Wolves did win on Christmas, snapping a 3-game losing streak, but it came in, like Jack said, very Wolvesian fashion. They get up 28 points in the third quarter. Luka gets hurt with like 2 minutes left in the first half, and he, by halftime, they've announced him as out, and the Dallas Mavericks come all the way back from down 28. The Wolves offense is just god awful down the stretch of the game, pretty much the entire fourth quarter. They get it to within two before Anthony Edwards makes a couple late buckets to seal the game. I think Kyrie had an attempt to take the lead down two. He had a three in the air. All of us having holding our breath on that one. But yeah, big picture, small picture thoughts on a single very interesting victory on Christmas.
Yeah, I think more than anything, I was just disappointed with Anthony Edwards' decision to just kind of goof around and jack up terrible shots and play isolation ball for no reason at the end of the third quarter before Chris Finch could get him out for Josh Minot in that, you know, lineup that we saw at the tail end of the first quarter, start of the second quarter, that had Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Dante DiVincenzo, Minot, Randall, and Reed, which has been pretty effective in the two games that we've seen them play together. And I think it's year five for Anthony Edwards. It's just things that really can't happen. I understand that you're up big, and at the time you're probably thinking, okay, well, you know, it can't be that bad because the Timberwolves are up 28. But again, if you keep wasting possessions, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 possessions in a row, that's going to add up. That's exactly what happened. And I think that it kind of took everyone else out of a rhythm when he decided to play like that. And it totally snowballed into the early part of the fourth quarter. And then again, when Ant comes back into the game and everyone else is kind of out of rhythm, then he feels the need to kind of force it and take matters into his own hands, which hasn't been the most efficient or, I guess, prudent offensive strategy and attack for the Timberwolves, especially in the last 2 or 3 weeks or so. And I think we saw a lot more of that in that Christmas Day game. But I think we found out, Ryan, that you've got to be up 22 going into the fourth quarter to give yourself enough wiggle room in order for those things to happen. But again, you know, before that, I just think it was a really strong defensive performance from the Wolves. And I think that they certainly have all the pieces that you need to have a really strong defense, and they can certainly cobble together enough lineups that have the length and the versatility defensively to be able to, you know, slow down even the most efficient of offenses like the one that Dallas has. So that was certainly nice to see. And I think bodes well for the people that were kind of shouting that they didn't think that stretch of sub 95 defensive games, you know, holding opponents to 95 points or less in 6 of 8 games was a mirage. So certainly, mm-hmm. certainly, you know, another bullet point to prove that I think this Timberwolves defense is certainly trending in the right direction.
Yeah, the first half is super like inspiring for what we think they can be. The defense was fantastic, but it's just kind of one of those things where as great as the defense was, and this has happened a lot this season, in the fourth quarter, they couldn't get stops. And maybe that part of that was just Kyrie Irving going ballistic, and that's that is mostly due to him being a fantastic player. But like they just, for whatever reason, and I think you bring it up, like Ant just kind of, it's his fifth year, and for fair or not, he is the leader of this team, or at least he needs to be. And for him to kind of let go of the rope and start jacking up crappy shots, and that clearly snowballed into other things. And it's obviously like the on-the-court stuff is not just him. There were plenty of people throwing up bad offensive possessions, not just him. So like that part of it isn't all his fault. But ultimately, like a lot of this leadership stuff that they're struggling with, it just kind of it has to be Ant, because Mike is not nearly as effective as he was in the years past. And so it's hard to be the same type of leader when you're not. I mean, he's been much better the past month or so than he was the first month of the season, but he's still not what he was last year. And two of their biggest leaders in the locker room last year were Kyle Anderson and Kat, both of which are obviously not on the team anymore. And so it just has to be Ant. And I don't know how much, like, it just feels like a lot of these games go the same exact route. At least this game, usually it's them getting down and then catching up. This was the beginning of the game was the reverse, where they get up and the other team comes back. But ultimately, like the fourth quarter offense is just the same exact issues. And honestly, it was about as bad as it was in that Dallas game as it's been in any other game. And I'm kind of searching for ways that they can get out of it, because it's obviously not just one thing. It's everything that's failing.
Yeah, it certainly is. I think the common denominator, though, in a lot of it is, you know, we've talked about Julius Randle and his struggles in the first quarter, especially. And I think you could pin a lot of that for the fourth quarter on Anthony Edwards. And you look at his clutch numbers this year, they have not been good at all. His fourth quarter numbers in general are really poor. His efficiency is down from last season, I believe. And I just think for Ant, there's a mounting sense of, okay, I need to take over, I need to do this myself, rather than trusting your teammates and getting off the ball, letting it come back and find you when the defense has already had to move a little bit. And I think that might be the biggest way in which Kat's absence is manifesting itself, in that, you know, maybe with Randle or DiVincenzo or you know, even Nas to a certain extent, some of these guys playing more alongside him in the fourth quarter, that he just doesn't trust those guys in the same way that he trusted Kat, where if he got off the ball and gave the ball to Kat, that the good things would happen, or that, you know, the spacing would be good enough where he could get the ball back and be able to attack. So I think that's something that the Timberwolves certainly need to continue to figure out. And I don't think it's for a lack of the Timberwolves trying to run things. I think when Mike Conley starts with the ball, the start of some of these possessions, he does a good job of kind of getting things organized and getting the ball, you know, kind of across half court and getting into something earlier in the shot clock. And then once Ant gets the ball, he just kind of holds it for 2, 3, 4 seconds, waits for Gobert mm-hmm. to come and set a screen. And then, you know, he invites two guys to the ball, and still to this, it's, you know, to this point in his kind of relationship with Rudy Gobert, now in year three now for them, that he just still has not been able to find a way to weaponize Gobert when two guys come to him. And I think one of the biggest areas we've seen Rudy grow this year has been as a passer on the short roll. And I think that's something that the Timberwolves need to find a way to get more out of, not necessarily just in the fourth quarter, but I do think that would be a consistent, repeatable thing that, you know, we've seen other teams hammer the Wolves with in the fourth quarter, just at times when they need a bucket this season. And just the fact that Ant does not have a better chemistry with Rudy Gobert. And I think that's obviously more on Ant than it is on Rudy, because Rudy's screen setting and the way that he engages him in a two-man game is great. And I just think Ant needs to, more than anything, more than any one individual skill development, whether that's a mid-range game or whatever the case may be, I think the number one thing he needs to improve on is finding Rudy. And I think that's that kind of shows up most in the fourth quarter, where it's like, oh man, you're going to run a ton of Ant and Rudy pick and roll. And that element is just not there.
Yeah. Weirdly, like the numbers on it to begin the year were really, really good. Like they were like the third best pick and roll pairing. And I dug into the numbers and it was just all Ant pulling up for three. Because for whatever reason, and teams aren't doing this anymore, they were just going under every single screen and Ant was walking into wide open threes and their pick and roll numbers were fantastic. But like if you filtered out Ant's shots and just looked at pick and roll numbers when Ant passed the ball or turned it over or drew like that, those shots, it was way down from last year. So it's not surprising that the minute teams, I don't know why they were going under on Ant in the first place, but whatever. Now that they've stopped doing that and they're largely bringing two to the ball every single time, Ant, he does this thing and it drives me nuts. He drives into the two people and he had an abysmal turnover late in that game where he drove into two people, just got caught in the air, got like went exactly where the defense is trying to get you to go. And to me, like you said, the pass that is either open or that needs to be like looked for first is that pocket pass to Rudy on the short roll. And but I don't know if Ant doesn't quite have the ability to make that pass yet, or if he doesn't trust Rudy to make the right play if he does make that pass, or some combination of the two. But like that is every time they get to that action, and I think Dante honestly finds that pass as much as anyone. Like Rudy has been so good in that action so far this year, and it just, this is probably even not even a late game offense thing, but like just a total game offense thing. Like that just needs to be a pass they need to focus on hitting. And I know like it's crazy like to think like how can we improve the offense? Well, let's get the ball in Rudy's hands and have him play make. I know like I think just like on the surface that seems bad, but maybe teams will like cover the shooters and it'll be forced for Rudy to drive to the basket and that'll stink or whatever. But like that has just not happened. It seems like every time Rudy gets the ball in the short roll, he's finding an open shooter or getting fouled.
Yeah, another thing I'd like to see too is you could even have Julius Randle come up and set the screen, even if it's kind of more of a ghost screen or it's just kind of a touch and release. I still think Ant would probably trust trying to make that pocket pass to someone like Julius Randle, who we've seen when he wants to be and chooses to be, is a very good playmaker in the middle of the floor. And that was a huge reason why the Timberwolves' three-point attempt rate, honestly, three-point percentage was so high at the start of the season, because Randle was drawing a lot of attention in the middle of the floor and spraying it out to shooters on the perimeter. And you know, there's probably another conversation to be had about the Timberwolves shooters shooting so much worse this year than last season. But again, I think that a lot of that process earlier on in the season was good. And we saw that in the early part of the fourth quarter against the Hawks, just in general, that the Wolves' ball movement was great and their open three-point shooting just let them down. But again, I think, you know, there's more ways to, you know, try to get the ball out of Ant's hands and be able to play behind it than just Rudy. And I think the Wolves need to probably get a little bit more creative. And I think what's unfortunate too is like you go back to the Golden State game and you have Steph Curry guarding Jaden McDaniels and the Warriors are switching everything. And you're watching the, you know, the Warriors and Lakers game last night. And what happens is, you know, you just come up and set the screen on Steph Curry for LeBron. Reeves sets the screen on, or, you know, whoever was bringing the ball up the floor and Steph was guarding late in that game, bring him up, force a switch, get LeBron on Steph and go from there. And the Wolves totally would have been able to, you know, have Jaden set a screen for Ant and switch off of that. But the problem is then when you don't have one of Randall or Gobert in the action and they're both on the floor, there's just not a whole lot of room for Ant to operate. And so I think that kind of maybe leads into, I think maybe why the Wolves need to make a starting lineup change, just because it unlocks more things that you can do for Ant. If Nas is in there instead of Julius in terms of the spacing that's around him and kind of having a better ball mover and quick decision maker, and Nas in there might help stimulate some better ball movement, player movement that can open the seas a little bit for Ant. But yeah, it's just kind of little things like that that you don't see the Timberwolves be able to take advantage a lot of when it's Ant and Randle and Gobert all on the floor.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things is the lineup, like to really try to get them. Ant has just been so much better with Nas on the floor. And I've kind of been, my point with like the starting lineup changes, I didn't view the starting lineup as important, but like they need to start closing with Nas when the game calls for it. But something that's kind of changed my mind, I texted you right at the end of that Warriors game, like, what the heck are they doing closing with Randall? And you pointed out, well, Nas had played the previous whatever minutes, he needed to sit down. And so to me, if they're going to close with Nas, they kind of got to start, like, they got to start him, because at that point in the game, he'd played only like 25 minutes, but he'd played the previous 15 or something. Like, I think they need to start Nas, because they also need to close with Nas. And there's a conversation to be had about losing Randall, and if you mentally, if you bring him to the bench and now he's really gone, or I don't know, but I mean, it's nice to have a win, but I'm just kind of, I think a change needs to be made somewhere. And that's just such like the first easiest part to look, because Randall's looked great with the second unit. Like that's been a solid like lineup recently. So putting him there permanently might be a better spot. I just don't know if they're going to get buy-in from him.
Yeah, that's a fair point for sure. I just think, again, if even if it doesn't help the offense as much, it certainly is going to help the defense. And, you know, just looking at the numbers, interestingly enough, so with Randall on, Ant on, and Rudy on, offensive rating is 113, which is right about at league average. And then with Nas on, Ant on, Rudy on, the offensive rating is actually about 7 points lower. It's 106, but the defensive rating is 11 points lower. So it's about 4 points higher in net rating. And so I think if that can even help you not fall into these huge holes earlier on in games, where then the Timberwolves have to spend the whole second and third quarter pitching a shutout and then just totally gas themselves before the fourth quarter, I think that would even help. But then again, like, Randall has been phenomenal in lineups with guys that come into the game in the back half of the first quarter. I mean, when you look at, you know, Julius Randall's two best lineups this season, or three best lineups this season are, you know, Ant, DiVincenzo, Alexander Walker, and Reed. So that's the lineup that's on in the back half of the first quarter. They're a plus 18.5 and have an offensive rating of almost 125, which is awesome. And then that lineup that we saw of DiVincenzo, Nah, Minot, Randall, and Reed is plus 45 in 51 possessions. I know it's a very small sample size, but you know that's one of the ways that Finch has been tinkering around. And if you're going to try to get to that lineup anyways, I think it might just make more sense to have Nas come off, or Nas start and Randall come off the bench, so that Randall can just be a, okay, you go eat when you're out there, when there's more spacing and kind of more guys that are moving it, that can almost encourage Randall to play that way a little bit more. Because when Randall makes quick decisions or he moves the ball quickly or attacks quickly, he's a really, really good offensive player. It's just when things slow down and then he gets into these, you know, drawn out isolation situations where he's taking these crazy, you know, step through, you know, fadeaway two contested twos in the lane, that's just when it gets really tough to watch and just kind of craters everything for the Timberwolves. And that's what we've seen early on in the first quarter of games here. So I think, again, if that wouldn't lose Randall and if he would be a pro about it, I think it would help Ant. I think it would help Randall. I think it would help Nas. I think it would help the team as a whole. And, you know, whether or not they want to do that because they're trying to thread this needle of keeping him happy and engaged and locked in, but also his keeping his trade value high while also actually trying to win games. It's just, you're trying to almost serve, you know, too many causes at once. And it's just a matter of trying to do the math and put all these inputs into an equation and see what the output ends up becoming. Because I just think that the status quo right now is not super sustainable unless the Timberwolves move the ball like they did on Christmas Day. And that's just not something we've seen them do a whole lot. So I don't have a whole lot of confidence that will continue, you know, the way that we saw on Christmas Day.
Yeah, that's, I mean, just basically the last 3 years running, they've just needed more offense. That's been the key with everything. I mean, the defense on any Rudy Gobert team has been phenomenal. We've seen that in the past 10 games. The Wolves are number one in defense, sixth on the season. I would expect they'd finish top five and probably closer to two or three. That'd be my guess, assuming this roster is what it is. But they just need more offense. And I'm starting to wonder, like you, how they're even going to get there. Like, because as much as I think like a starting lineup change would be good, I don't think that that's going to be some crazy fix, because the roster is what the roster is. I would like to see them run more just set plays in general. Maybe that's on the coaching staff to do that. Maybe that's on the players. They do call sets and they just don't run them properly or at all.
I think they do call more sets than fans think they do. It's probably especially true. When Mike is on the floor. But
yeah,
how much of it is just players making open shots at a higher rate?
That's true. I did write down a tweet from Tyler Metcalf. Just he marked down all like the 3-point shooting from the corners this year. Jaden down 4%, Mike down 16%. This is from last year. Randall down from 50% from the corner to 29%. Nas is down 12%, and Dante DiVincenzo is down nearly 20%. The only shooters that are shooting what you'd expect from the corner, Ant and Naw, they're the only ones above 32%. I do agree with you. Like, in like the short term, like the Wolves' ability to win a playoff series or get to the top four seed, all that stuff. Like, I don't know what percentage, but like a big percentage of that issue or solving that is just going to be guys hitting open shots.
Yeah. Because the thing is like, if the process is good and you are creating open shot, I mean, that Hawks game was a perfect example.
Yeah.
The ball was flying around. Everyone was moving. Their guys were driving and kicking. They're creating wide open shots and guys were just missing shots. I think the Wolves were like 11 of 25, which is 44%, I believe, from three in the first half of that game. And I think there were 3 of 18 in the second half. And it's just tough to win a game when you shoot 3 of 18 from 3.5 these days, especially against a team that can get off as quickly and as explosively as the Hawks do. So it's not like the Timberwolves don't have the pieces that can do it. And that's, I think, what's frustrating is you've seen them do it in flashes, or you've seen individual players kind of get on these heaters and make a bunch of really big shots, but it's just, they haven't been able to find enough of it across the roster consistently enough. And I think, again, it's just another area where you probably miss Carl a little bit, and that's mm-hmm. just another downgrade, even if the volume isn't there, that just some of that efficiency that you had last season is now gone. And certainly DiVincenzo being a high volume guy that's not making a ton of them isn't helping. But I think he's looked much more like the New York version of Dante in these last three games than for any sustained stretch at any other point in the season.
Yeah, I think Dante will get there. The difference between Cat and Randall, the shooting wise, is interesting, because I think it's a good example of attempts and makes aren't like honestly what makes a 3-point shooter valuable. It's what the defense is, to what extent is the defense willing to test them or to respect their shot. Because while like Randall makes a similar number of he shoots as many attempts and makes a similar number, or he makes a similar number on more attempts, so like the 3-point volume is not going down from Randall to Cat. But I mean, the percentage and defenses respecting Cat is just so, I mean, we saw it against the Knicks game. Like, Rudy is so used to guarding even a regular 3-point shooting center that like won't shoot from 2 feet behind the line, won't just pull up in like late transition or whatever, and multiple him and Jaden were step slow and closing out to that. And that's just such a, and then it, as it does with Cat, it opens up his drive game, blah 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 blah. But like with Randall, they just don't respect it. And to Jaden, it's they don't respect his shot either. And obviously Rudy doesn't shoot. So like the paint is just clogged. And I don't know. Another starting lineup or closing lineup change might be going to Nam more often to create space for Jaden. That, again, kind of similar to Randall, creates like this whole question. You're paying Jaden a lot of money. At some point, you're going to need him to be maybe all-star caliber, or like a fringe, like that type of player, to like, just given the money you're paying him and the timelines he's on with Ant, and they just kind of haven't seen that. But I mean, they're not going to shoot as bad as they have so far this year.
I mean, Nas is shooting 35% on four catch and shoot threes a game. DiVincenzo is shooting 35% on four catch and shoot threes a game. Jaden McDaniels is shooting 32% on three catch and shoot threes per game. The only guys who are above league average are Na at 47% and Ant at 45%. So, like, Mike with his left wrist, which is not really something that's been talked about a bunch, but is definitely a factor. Like, I don't think you can expect him to be the same self that he was last year, but at some point, guys just got to make shots. And I think for Jaden, you know, he shot 40% from three in December after shooting like 18% in October and 30% in November. So hopefully he continues to trend in the right direction. But yeah, it's the same thing with Finchy, man. Like, everyone wants to be mad at Finch. And look, Finch has certainly not been perfect, but like, Finch isn't missing wide open jump shots. You know what I'm saying? I think that. On some level, how much of the lineup levers that you want to pull outside of, you know, Randall for nods, which I think is a somewhat, you know, simple one that we've talked about, but how much of those other lineup combinations are just about riding the hot hand or trying to figure out which guy is going to make shots on any given night. And I think that if everyone kind of progresses progresses to their means as shooters, I think it'd be a much easier conversation to have.
Yeah. And to touch on the Finch thing quick, I think interesting thing that happens with coaches is that, like, if a player has a bad stretch, and we'll talk about Ant, who's had a bad stretch the past month or so. If a player has a bad stretch, I think people are like, especially like in a sport like baseball, people will be like, yeah, bad stretch, that happens, how it goes. But like, coaches don't get awarded that same type of thinking where, I think it's fair to say Chris Finch has not had a good start to the season. You've said it in plenty of press conferences. I didn't play this person correctly. I didn't play. But like, just because you've had a bad couple months, and I'd say a bad couple months being put in a tough spot with how the players are playing, with the trade happening so close to training camp, I think like he, at this point, and I would probably say the same thing about Tim Connelly, who at the very least, the Cat trade doesn't look great right about now. But like, you got to give these people, like, they had a bad stretch, or applies more to Finch. You had a bad stretch. That doesn't mean you're a terrible coach. It just means you had a bad stretch. I mean, look, like, a good example is Finch screwed up the end of that Miami game where they got the and one late to take the lead. The next night, or their next game, Spoelstra, one of, if not the best coaches in the league, just has about as bad of a coaching blunder since Michigan in the Final Four, calls a timeout he doesn't have and immediately. Very rarely do you see, like, the coach cost them the game. They were going to go to another overtime, call the timeout, and he blew it. So, like, you kind of, like, that's my thing, is, like, he's not done a good job so far, but that doesn't mean he is a bad coach.
No, and I think my bigger problems are more organizational, because I don't know if the Rob Dillingham decision has been an organizational one or has been a Finch one in terms of, look, I have no problem whatsoever that the Timberwolves are 15 and 14 right now. And people may get frustrated with me for saying that, considering they're coming off a Western Conference Finals appearance, but like, I have no problem with that as long as you're achieving something in doing that. And achieving something in doing that could mean, you know, they're bringing along Rob Dillingham, they're and playing him considerable minutes. They're scaling up Naz Reid to a point where he's playing 30, 32 minutes a game as the go-to guy to see if, you know, ahead of free agency, when you're willing, you know, going to figure out how much you're going to pay him. I think you're kind of almost putting yourself in a tough spot of like, hey, this may be another Jaden McDaniels situation where we may end up committing a ton of money to this guy, but we really haven't seen him play at this offensive scale that we're going to eventually need him to play at. And I think that, and look, I think there's a lot more confidence in Naz being able to be worth $30 million a year or whatever it ends up being. But I think that has to bring at least some level of pause in that you haven't seen him in that role, but you're going to pay him for that role. And the fact that they've done neither of those two things, they haven't really gotten Josh Minot to involve in the rotation or Joe Ingles to involve in the rotation. And when they did play, it was in these super small stretches for a game or two here or there that didn't really show a whole lot. And then Joe Ingles obviously has the left calf strain that keeps him sidelined, and he's may
questionable.
Return. He yeah, may he's return questionable. After you know he's worked out before each of the last you know 5 or 6 games. But you know, I just think for Finch, he keeps saying that oh, we're experimenting, oh, we're trying this, we're trying that. But the only real experimentation that I've seen lineup wise from Finch in the last month is what we've seen the last couple days of having, you know, that lineup of Nah, Dante, Josh, Julius, and Nas. And I think that's a great adjustment. I'm all for Finchie trying different stuff, you know, but if you're going to try different stuff, you've got to try it for a little more than 2 or 3 minutes in one game, and then maybe go back to it a week later. I think you've got to commit to it and say, hey, you know, if we lose a game or two because of this, that's okay, as long as we are getting some clear, definitive answers about whether this tweak is going to work or not. And again, to that catch and shoot point, I think Joe Ingles is a guy might not move very well defensively anymore, but I think he's a guy who off the ball knows what he has to do defensively, understands how to play with Mike and with Rudy. And last season with Orlando was an excellent catch and shoot 3-point guy, shot like 45% from three on catch and shoot looks. And, you know, again, it's going to be tough because you want to play Josh Minot. You're probably not going to extend the rotation out to, you know, out to 10 guys when Ingles is back. But it's just, if you continue to struggle with some of these issues, like, you know, the options are there. Yeah. It's just a matter of like, are you going to actually try to use them, or is it just going to remain a break glass in case of emergency when someone gets injured type of thing?
Yeah, I agree with you. My thoughts are like big picture. What is this team? What do they view this? Do they view this team as like the title contender we thought they were pre-cat trade? Because I just don't think that that's what this team is, unfortunately. Until they can show me that their offense can climb out of 23rd and can get even close to average, I don't think that that's what this team is. At least pre whatever Randall trade, whatever happens there.
I think that'll happen. It's just, yeah, you don't, it's hard to, you know, I'm not necessarily going to talk about whether they're a title contender or not, because I think, you know, a lot of things can change from the middle part of the season, like just ask Dallas last season. But, sure, you know, part of it, too, is like you look around at the rest of the Western Conference. And yeah, the rest of the conference is stacked. No question about it. But there have been no teams in the West outside of maybe Oklahoma City that have really been super impressive to me for prolonged stretches in this season.
And the Wolves have matched up with OKC, which I'm very interested to see, because like you said, even Dallas to a certain extent, Dallas would probably be my personal like second best team in the West so far, although Luka's going to miss some time here, is what do they look like against Oklahoma City, who's pretty clearly to me, at least from a regular season standpoint, is the best team in the Western Conference. But everyone else they've played, like they played, I guess they haven't played Memphis either, so that'll be an interesting game whenever that happens. But like they played Houston, who's won a bunch of games, and I was like, I don't know, the Wolves lost to them, and I was like, that seemed more about the Wolves shooting themselves in the foot than anything Houston was doing specifically. Like the Lakers have a better record than them, but we saw them come through town, and they didn't look like any sort of solid team. The Warriors aren't anything special to me, so.
And that's kind of my entire point, is it's just, again, like, how the seeding works out is how the seeding works out, but I don't think there's any one of these teams. I mean, I think Dallas is the best team in the West when they're fully constituted. Like, playoff series, who would I want to see least? It's 100% Dallas. There's just no other team that has really stood out to me in any real way. And I think, again, there is going to be a stretch in which the Timberwolves rattle off 10 of 12 or 10 of 13 or 14 games, and everybody just kind of chills out because this team is just too talented. They have way too many high level rotation guys, and they'll figure it out on some level. But again, it's more just about a playoff series. And I think, to me, what concerns me the most thinking about a playoff series is just the late game offense. And I think if you can you can figure that out, and you can at least try to give Ant, you know, here are some, go watch the film of what he did against Phoenix in the closing moments of the Phoenix games. He was awesome. Go watch what he did in the closing moments of some of the, you know, some of the games against Dallas in game seven. You know, for the most part, I thought he
watch him hit
really
his head
well.
On the backboard in Indiana.
Yeah, like, you know, it's there, and we've seen it. It's just a matter of being able to tap into it. And again, I think if you can fix some of the spacing stuff that we've talked about, that unlocks a lot of other, you know, tweaks that you can make that can help him be more effective in the fourth quarter.
I think this is a good segue to Ant, because he obviously was, I think we both agree, the biggest reason for the offensive collapse late in the game. But as he often does, he was also the reason why they were able to pull it out late. He has two big buckets. That was kind of the first glimpse I've saw of like the late game Ant killer. It was just two buckets, but it was solid, controlled, got to the paint, had a little pull up that off the glass, and then got all the way to the rim for a layup to seal it. And they desperately need more from him because he has just been, I don't think you can correct me if you disagree with me, but like this past month or so, maybe 6 weeks, about as poor as he's played, probably since he was a rookie, I think. It's just been stretches of like so many first halves where he has like 4 points, 5 points, and they just, as they fall behind in these games, it's just kind of like screaming, where, Ant, we need you, man. And maybe some of it's not fair, like they need more from a lot of other guys too, but like I kind of said at the top, like Ant is the leader of the team, and they need like the on the court example, like the just more, like they need him to make better plays, smarter plays, and more impactful plays.
Totally. And I think a lot of it too has to do with him not being aggressive enough early in games. And I think him being too passive in games is just kind of then put more pressure on his teammates to determine whether Ant's going to kind of find it in the flow or if he's going to have to try to manufacture things himself. And I think the more that he can get into the game earlier on in the game will be better for him. I think when he was playing his best basketball towards the start of the season, it was because he was just letting it rip early and often. And if he can get back to that, I think start as a scorer and then let the way that the defense guards him as a scorer kind of unlock the playmaking for him is kind of the way to go. And mm-hmm. before we see all of that, I think, or before we see him kind of get back to that, it's going to be, it may be a little bit. And that's, again, part of that is just due to the nature of the schedule, right? You're seeing Houston, who's got, you know, Dylan Brooks, Amen Thompson. You've got San Antonio, obviously, with Wemby, and you know, just some of the other bodies that they have. You know, Sohan is just another guy that they can throw at him that's pretty long. Oklahoma City, obviously, they have Dort and Cason Wallace. Boston, Derek White, Jrue Holiday. So these next four games, you're gonna, I think, probably see Ant have to be a little bit more involved as a playmaker and getting off the ball early. But then after that, you have Detroit, the Clippers, the Pelicans, the Magic, the Grizzlies, you know, some teams like that I think should be a little bit easier for Ant to get off, just because the one-on-one defense, you know, isn't on the same level that he's seen the last few games here and upcoming in the next few.
Yeah, that Detroit game looms as like if this is truly the same game or the same season as 2 years ago.
Another players only meeting.
That Detroit game looms as like just although Detroit is playing so much better than they were last year and 2 years ago, but still, like,
that's a good thing because we got their pick. You know, if they're out of the lottery.
Yeah, in the locker room the other night, it was the Golden State loss, which is particularly brutal. I go up to Dane and be like, "Hey, Detroit won." Just trying to cut the tension at all possible. This was I think after Ant blew up at the refs. I don't know if we want to talk about that. Ant got fined $75,000 for saying a whole lot about the refs. I think he's right in the sense of I don't think he gets great calls. I thought the Dallas game was pretty bad. I honestly didn't notice it again in the Warriors game, but I think the point, I don't think, again, it's not rigged. It's not, he's not getting signaled out. He's one of the biggest stars in the league. If they were going to rig it for anyone, it'd be him or guys like him. But I do think there's certainly like a, he doesn't flop. He doesn't like go after contact and they don't call it. But they do call like some of the chippy fouls. Like there's one against Luka. A lot of these calls are probably right under the rule book. And it's just like a fan of basketball. They just stink. But obviously he can be, have a small, he can be right a little bit and going after the refs when the, all the reporters want to talk about the actual game isn't the greatest look.
Yeah. I thought that that was unfortunate because you're 2 of 9 from 2. And 4 of 11 from 3, and you want to talk about the refs is a little tough considering that, you know, you were whistled for 5 less fouls than they were, and you shot 2 more free throws than Golden State did is not exactly the best game to choose that. But and when you score 15 points in the first quarter, yeah, you know, pick a better game, I think, to complain about the refs if you're gonna you know, invest $75,000 in trying to get some better calls.
And they have not gotten the better calls. I'm not saying the refs were bad or anything the last two games. They just that the Wolves have not gotten to the free throw line. Whether that's a coincidence or not, I'll let the film review people tell me if they're getting bad calls. But like he just, there's one thing to be like to start saying the refs are bad and then like go on to the rest of your media availability, but like he just wouldn't let it go to the point that like Wolves PR had to like end the media availability before something really bad happened or whatever. But like, yeah, it's just it's a little bit frustrating, especially because like he didn't talk to the media all up and before the Knicks trade, and it's like a little selfishly like I wish I would have gotten to put an ant quote in my Carl article, didn't get to do so. But I mean, I don't know how much to read into that. Like we talk about Ant needs to be a leader. I don't know if this is an area that is like a strike against him or whatever, where he needs to be better, or if it was just a single night of being frustrated with, I mean, obviously I think we can both agree. It's a little bit like projection. Like he was frustrated with the overall situation, and the easy place to put that is the officials.
For sure. And I think again, you know, I would have preferred, and it kind of came on the heels too of the Cat comments, where it's just like, you know, two games in a row of just not having great comments after the game is tough. And again, it's year 5, dude.
Yeah,
that's like year 2, year 3 stuff.
Yeah, and it's not just on him. Like it's obviously it's on the entire organization. Like to. I mean, it's on him to play better and do all this stuff, but it's also like, it's the NBA. To a certain extent, the organization probably needs to cater to him a little bit more in the sense of, or maybe they don't need to cater to him. Ultimately, how far this thing goes is how far Anthony Edwards is going to take it. Obviously, there's other, like, he's going to need solid teammates and all that, but like, my big thing is like, Ant needs to be a first team all NBA caliber player and just has not been that. Obviously, a lot of that is his fault, but like the players around him, the coaching around him, the front office around him also needs to do better. It's kind of been a total system failure, not failure, but like the whole thing has been under expectation.
Especially with the way the team is constructed. Like I've been sitting here and saying that they're very talented, that they have a lot of talent. But again, I think, again, he's by far and away the best player, and you've got to find a way to get more out of him with this roster.
Yeah. And we kind of touched on the schedule, but kind of expect that to come mid-January, late January, when the schedule kind of lightens up, right? They have a bunch of road games, like up until about mid-January, they kind of go like -4, or like they'll have played 4 more road games than home games, which means they'll make those back up. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this team is at closer to the deadline. Whether it's at the deadline or at the end of the season, the Randall contract looms as like the next big pivot point for this organization. Whether they're able to, I mean, I guess I should. The next big pivot point for this organization is at the end of January when the ownership situation figures out, because that is, I mean, I don't know. I have no idea who's going to win that, but that just seems that's going to be such a huge swing point because
Tim Connelly might... And it depends, too, like how long it gets dragged out even after there is an initial decision because we don't know if there's going to be...
Because if Mark and Alex win, then the NBA could, in theory... Then the NBA has a decision. The owners could, in theory, be like, we're tired of this. Just let Glenn have it back. They, in theory, could do that.
I would be shocked if that happened. Yeah. Just because that would be completely unprecedented. Would send a pretty... Or create a pretty dangerous precedent that...
Agreements can be... Yeah.
But... You know, I think everybody involved outside, like everyone at the league probably just wants it to be done.
Just go through.
Yeah.
And then, hey, we can get the Phoenix Suns, the owner, the Ishbias to own the Twins, and we'll be rocking and rolling, right?
Yeah, I bet that'll happen. So, well, at least I sure hope so.
It was funny the other day. People are passing around. The Suns are... They're no longer charging $7.50 for a bottle of water, and people praise them. And all the Twins fans are like, why can't we have that? And I'm like, they do. There's a concession stand in Target Field that charges $2 for soda and $2 for popcorn. Like, it's like, why are we celebrating something the Twins already have? But yeah, my only experience with the Ishbias was going to the playoffs last year, and they had a media event and at their bar underneath the stadium, and they had all the expensive liquor available. So if that's any indication, and they have the highest payroll in basketball, so if that's any indication on what the Ishbias are willing to spend on, it's the high price tequila, I guess.
Hey, drink up. If that's your thing, drink up, baby.
No, tequila is not my thing. I'll sip on my cheap rum and cokes, and that'll be plenty. But yeah, that's where we'll wrap it up. Jack, you got anything to plug?
No, just yeah, after every single game, pretty much we're live on the Locked On Minnesota YouTube channel. And me and my man Luke Inman, sometimes Ben Beacon or Sam Ekstrom fill in for my guy Luke, and we kind of run through anywhere from 25 to 40 minutes after every game, breaking down the biggest talking points of every game, kind of some minute on the fringes stuff of small tweaks of the rotation or kind of looking at the micro of what was different about that specific game compared to, what we've seen from the Timberwolves as a whole, breaking down some trends over, three, four, five game sets. And then obviously previewing who's coming up next. So we have a ton of fun doing it almost every single game on the Locked On Minnesota YouTube channel. So go check that out. If you're looking for live instant reaction, we go live within 5-10 minutes after every game. So having a lot of fun doing that stuff over there and popping over here when duty calls.
Yeah, it's always fun to, after some of the more interesting losses, it's always fun to check you out and see how much you're pounding the fist on the table. You usually keep it pretty level-headed where maybe if I were to record that soon after the game, I might be a little bit more frustrated, but you do a good job of keeping it straight.
We try to. I think if I was pounding my fist on the table after every single game, that we could pound the fist out of.
The table would be worn out.
Table would be worn out. I think my mental health would be in a tough spot too. So,
well, they got us on Christmas. They gave us. I was just like, I was with my family. I'm like, please, I just. It's like, I just need this one. Just get me through this one. I want to enjoy Christmas. And I don't know. You can go lose to Houston tomorrow night. I don't know. But yeah, thanks for coming on, Jack. Early next week, I'll be back on with Leo. So we'll see you guys then. Thanks for listening.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.